Okay, give us your full name.
My name is William Harry Gibson.
And what year were you born?
I was born in April 15th, 1926.
And were you born in Norway?
No, I wasn't. I was born in Visalia, California. You'll find out why here pretty soon.
Were there other members of the family here in Norway at that time?
At 1926? No. They all left. The Gibsons, George Gibson and his entire family of boys and girls, except for my grandfather, moved to California in 1888. Those boys brought up on that farm up at Norway Center, they left at a young age and went to California and made big names for themselves.
Oh, what did they do out there?
Well, one was a judge and another was a banker and another was a big gun in the Republican Party. They arrived there, I would say, around the 70s, 1870s.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have the, you want to hold that a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the...
Your grandfather was in business in Norway. What sort of business did he have before he left in 1922?
He worked for the Spinney Shoe Shop for 19 years. First job he ever had in Norway. And in about 1909, he bought the Norway Farmers Union. And he established a business in grain and I've got his and he I have a record of the deeds. He sold it in 1922. There's his flour, corn, oats, meal, graham, rye, meal, wheat, beans, and all kinds of sacked food. Feed. H. E. Gibson. And he was there, I say, from about 1909 until 1922. When they sold out and went to California to join all the rest of the family who had been out there for many years.
And did very, very well, it seems.
Yeah.
So how did you get back here?
My father, the Gibsons, starting at least with Samuel in Bryant Pond, were all storekeepers. They seem to migrate toward keeping store, and so my father and mother, my mother was from West Paris, Stearns Hill, and my father was from Norway. And he graduated from Bowdoin in 1921 and moved to California with his parents in 1922. And my mother finished a year of teaching school in Paris and moved to California in 1922. And they were married there in 1922. And then we had my brother Edwin, was born in 1924. I was born in 1926. And my sister Joanne was born in 1928. There were three of us kids. So anyway, my father went out there fresh out of college to make a living for his family. And he worked in banks, and that he was interested in banking, and thought about becoming a lawyer. But for some reason, that tendency toward storekeeping ended up with his father and Uncle Guy, who lived in Roseville, California, established a Buster Brown shoe store in Roseville, California in 1926, the year I was born. And I don't think I've got it here. I got a picture of it. It was a beautiful store. And they did very well until about 1930-31. The Great Depression ended up with people not buying shoes. And I don't know what happened, but they had to close it in 1927. And so my father, he did certain kinds of part-time jobs looking for some work during the Depression in Roseville. And my grandfather Stearns was on the farm up here in West Paris all by himself writing letters, said, "Oh, I miss you. I wish you'd come back and join me during this time." So in 1932, we bought a trailer, hitched it to the car, filled it with what goods we could carry, and we drove back to Maine in 1932, and I've been here ever since.
Okay. All right. But
California has been a drawing card for my family ever since. We've got so many relatives in California. It's amazing. You see, they all ended up out there.
Seem to gravitate toward it.
I don't know of any Gibson other than my brother's family in this community, left in this community.
So when they moved back, they moved to Stearns Hill, where you live now.
Yeah.
Okay. So you must have gone to school in local schools.
I went to the Hollow School. Some people call it Hungry Hollow, but it's really the Hollow School in West Paris until the seventh grade. Then I went to Paris High School and graduated in 1943.
And then what did you do?
I the war was on the year I graduated, and I was 17 at the time. I had time to go to Orono for three semesters and got a year's credit. And then I joined the Navy when I turned 18. And I spent 2 years in the Navy. And I was 20 years old when I got out. And I went to Orono thinking I'd go back and pick up where I left off, but it was so crowded with veterans who were going back there, and they were all looking to be engineers, as I thought I would be, and it occurred to me that there'd be a glut of engineers after the war was over. So I started looking around, And we had a good friend who lived in the summer at Swift's Corner in that beautiful old Timothy Swift house. And we used to visit him a lot. He was the guidance director at Hope High School in Providence, Rhode Island, in his career. And he said, well, I know the Vice President of Brown. I could get you in there if you'd like to try that. So I applied, and I was accepted at Brown. And I switched to economics as my major. And in 1949, and I graduated, I was lucky to get a job. I was hired for the kind of a job that farm boys were all looking for. I got hired by General Electric Company. And I started a 20-odd year career at General Electric and got married at the right after graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a business career for 22 years before we moved back to the old farm, and because my father had passed away and my mother was trying to sell the farm in the 60s. And after 20 years working in offices, my health began to trouble me. And as I say, my mother was alone back on the farm. We decided to join the Back to Land movement and go back to the West Paris in 1971. And we've been there ever since.
Well, and you had some interesting jobs as probably a teenager when you had were able to drive. Oh, and yeah, you were mentioning about driving people around during the summer.
It was wonderful. The war was, I graduated from high school in 43. But while I was junior and senior, I was old enough to drive. And these lovely old ladies from Boston, who had islands on Norway Lake, I became, and my brother and I alternated. They had this beautiful new boathouse built, and they had a lovely 1941 Plymouth fresh out of the factory, and a nice boat and outboard to go back and forth to the island with. So that was a summer job for us. And they were amazing people. They were all friends of Mrs. Kamerling, who had the adjoining island.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all friends from New England Conservatory of Music, where they all went to school together. So it was a beautiful and a very inspiring kind of a job to be with those people.
And you mentioned about taking them up to the C.A. Stevens house.
Oh, sure. That was an annual event. It was to go and visit Mrs. Plummer, Mrs. Stevens, and we would drive up to the door of the laboratory, and one of us would get out with a name card, fancy engraved personal card, take it to the door and hand it to the maid, and the maid would take the card in to Mrs. Stevens to announce who was there, and she'd come back to the door and invite us to come in.
So were you invited in as well?
Oh, yeah.
And what sort of things did they do? What kind of event was it?
I don't remember the conversations at all. Maybe I didn't go in with them because I probably stayed in the car.
And you mentioned that you went to the back to the land when your family came back. Did you have any participation, like in the local county fair?
That was in 1971. When we first came back to Maine, I decided, I still had a daughter in college, and I decided to look for work locally, and was hired by Dexter Stoll in Bryant Pond to be office manager at the Stoll Spool Mill. So I worked there for 5 years. And Jane, at the same time, went to work for the school district as an art teacher. And so we managed the transition that way. So actually my experience at Stoll's was very helpful because I learned a lot about the lumber wood business. And so when we ended up back at the farm, I spent 5 years there, and then I decided I had to go back to the farm. My mother would call me, says, "Bill, you got to come home. The cows are out." You know. So I gave up working for Dexter in 1975. And then I went full-time. So it was more of a subsistence kind of thing. We had a couple of cows, pig, chickens, just enough to keep us fed and busy. And we made... The farm had a maple syrup operation that had been going on for years, so I picked that up from a person who had been leasing it. And then I plunged into logging in a big way, and we did. The place had been a tree farm. My mother had joined the tree farm early on. So we we were tree farmers, which was a very interesting period, because the paper mills, in our case the S.D. Warren in Westbrook, would always have tree farmer meeting every summer, where they would sponsor educational and interesting wood issues. That's when we first saw this period when biomass was all the rage, and the people were having their forests logged, and then very carefully taking care of the brush and that sort of, and the waste, and so that was the beginning of the biomass craze that started with all this fabulous equipment that were chipping and transporting and so on. But I also sold firewood. I had my own splitter, and I did a lot of firewood and Jane, being a teacher, had summers off. We had monstrous vegetable gardens. But because of my background in finance with GE, I began to get involved in local nonprofits. I started with the I started actually with the Western Foothills Land Trust. I became interested in land preservation, and through my connections there, I became treasurer of the McLaughlin Foundation, which was trying to save the McLaughlin Garden from being converted into a business of some kind. And then got involved with the Fair Share Co-op as treasurer. So I spent a lot of my spare time with nonprofits of various sorts. At the same time, though, running this What did I say?
You're running the farm?
Well, I was not farming. I baled hay, sold hay. So it was a combination of farm work and also outside. I got involved with the West Parish Planning Board and the budget committee and all that sort of thing. So I was pretty busy all that time. And I continued baling hay and selling wood until about 2 years ago. And I sold all my equipment. And I ran out of customers. There were many people who had horses back in that in the early 2000s, and all of a sudden they started moving away or selling their horses, and hay sales locally sort of dried up. So that's when I decided to sell. And now I have invested that money in a high-tech Boeing machine for. I thought a bush hog would do, but a bush hog doesn't do the job I wanted to on the field. So I got a Land Pride mower that I've been struggling with because it seemed to be too much of a drag on the tractor I had. It turns out the tractor had a engine problem that needed to be fixed. So now we're back, and I have a son-in-law who lives nearby now who's taken on the maintenance of the fields and the woods.
Oh, that's good.
It was a head gasket that needed to be replaced.
Yeah. What specific memories do you have of Norway during the time that you were here?
It's interesting. The question came up, how did these ladies, Miss James and Miss Dean, how did they get to know about you and end up offering you a job driving in? And it turns out, we were good friends with the Longleys, and Forrest Longley recommended us, my brother and me, to be drivers for these ladies. So I remember so well. We, E.B. Jackson had a grocery store where Ari's is now. It was the most outstanding grocery operation you could imagine. They had the best of everything, all the fine brands and all the best fruits and vegetables and so on. So all the folks, like these ladies who are used to upscale grocery shopping, you know, they loved Jackson's Market. First it was E.B., Ernest Jackson, and then his son. What was his son's name? Ernest? Well, anyway, that was important. Thinking about Norway. Well, I was interested in the Norway library because Mrs. Kamerling, I got to know Mrs. Kamerling very well because her association was the ladies I worked for. And so we got very well connected with the Norway Library for a while. Norway Memorial Library.
Any specific recollections about Maud Kamerling?
Of what?
Any specific recollections about Maud Kamerling?
Oh yes, we would go to dinner at her place on the island, and she had a maid named India, and she had a floor switch that she would use to call India to come and serve us, and it was very, very upscale and very, very friendly though, and not stiff. She even had a guest once who was the son of her husband, who was an admiral. She used to talk about the admiral a lot, whom she had been married to. And this son would come and visit. His name was the same as his father, Gustav Kamerling. And he was an interesting man. It's amazing, you know, what we were involved in was being connected with those ladies.
What other interesting people around town would you have known? I mean, we have quite a few characters who were around town.
Well, the one I always remember is old Dr. Hayden, the dentist. Spent a lot of time in his office, which was over Ed's barbershop.
Your brother became a dentist, didn't he?
My brother?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Was he practicing in town here?
He practiced first in South Paris, and not long after he opened his office, he decided he wanted to be straightens teeth.
Oh. Yeah, the orthodontist.
Yeah. He put his family on hold, and he moved back to Boston, to Boston University, and got his degree in orthodontia. And then he opened up an office in Lewiston, and that's where he practiced.
What else on, let's say, Main Street comes to mind that's changed? Do you remember the Norway Diner?
No, I don't. I saw that in your article in the newspaper. I don't remember the Norway Diner. I used to enjoy talking with guy who owned the Blue Store.
Gwine.
Yeah. And my brother Warren, I have a younger brother. I said I had three. There were three of us that actually, the three of us who were born in California were joined by another child born here after my family moved to Maine.
Oh.
His name was Warren Gibson. And he graduated from Bowdoin and started work somewhere, I think, in Boston. And Forrest Longley and Dr. Easton went to Boston to see if they could induce him to come back and join the Norway National Bank, which he did. And he went to work for Jim Phillips, maybe, at the Norway,
mm-hmm.
Norway National Bank, which eventually became Key Bank.
And, right.
And I remember Warren, he loved going over to Newberry's on his break to get a soda or something. Now, where was the diner compared with the Newberry's location?
It was there isn't a space for it now. There's a building where it was when they expanded that building. There was Newberry's and then there was the furniture store. And when they expanded that, it kind of took the space that the diner had used. But there were quite a few soda fountains, weren't there? Several places that had soda fountains.
Yeah, sure. I remember Newberry's very well, and I guess it was New England Furniture,
mm-hmm.
but then was the Hathaway House and the open space there, and that's why I'm having trouble placing the diner on that side of Main Street.
Yeah, the space isn't there anymore, but it was because it was moved out. It was only there about 10 years, I guess.
10 years.
And then they moved it to Brunswick.
Uh-huh.
But was the Tucker harness business operating at any time that you remember?
Yeah. That's right. That's where my grandfather would take his harnesses to be repaired. Yeah. And there was I saw it in one of these. There was a jeweler, sharing the space. Where did we see that? In one of these,
In the same building as the harness shop?
It's almost like it's one of the Bickfords, but I can't be sure about that. Yeah, I remember when the Norway Savings Bank was where Bruce Rude has his office.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that? What was the guy? He spent his life there. Freeman. He had a big vault that was very obvious as he went in, and
Yeah.
And then there was Ashton's drugstore. That was a soda fountain.
Yeah. Was Stone's drugstore operating?
Oh yeah,
at
that
time.
Yeah. Who? was running that then? I should know.
Was that Josephine Stone's husband running it?
Maybe. What was his name? Who else? It seemed like they would change pharmacists from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I think, my drugstore experience was in South Paris, the Rexall store.
Yeah.
That's where I used to hang out before school at Paris High School.
What kind of things went on in the towns? Did you get to town once a week or less often than that?
I spent a lot of time at the Fair Share Co-op. My accounting and financial background preceded laptops and other electronic devices. I was what you call green nightshade bookkeeper. So I spent a lot of time doing hand recording at those places.
And your family had a house here in town. What street did you say that was on?
Crescent Street. Yeah.
How long did they live there?
Well, they lived there until 1922, when my grandfather and grandmother moved to California.
Okay, and your father was in, that's when he was in business.
My grandfather was in business.
Right.
No, my father was junior. I'd like to ask you, though, when I went through my files, I found these deed references where in 1922, when he was liquidating the Farmers Union, he also had owned the, which I call Fletcher's Candy Shop building. And I have been told somewhere along the line that at the same time he was doing the Norway Farmers Union, he also had a grocery store at that Danforth Main Street corner, and that it was very unusual because it was a help-yourself kind of a place rather than the original type of grocery store where you told the clerk what you wanted and he went over and pulled it off the shelf and put it on the counter, you know.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, the Historical Society had a Main Street tour, like the Rustfield tour, didn't we, this summer?
It's coming up next year.
I thought we didn't get to it this year. I thought I missed it.
Nope, not yet.
Well, I'd like to find out what the history of that Fletcher building really is, because, as I say, he owned it at one time.
Oh, we can look that up.
I have a reference to his selling it in 22 when they liquidated and went back to Visalia.
Are there any family stories that that come to mind about the times that they were up between the lake settlement and Swift's Corner? Any interesting stories that the family passed down of that time?
I would like to know more about what George Edwin Gibson did with that big set of buildings there. I do know from some publication of the Norway Historical Society that he was very active during the corn season, George was. He was the field man who would who would go out into the various farms that were raising corn for the factory. He would be the one who would decide when the corn should be picked. It was very critical to get it picked at the right time. And that he was also, according to that article, Ed Staples is the one who wrote that. Mm-hmm. I don't know him, but I'd like to talk to him sometime.
Oh, sure. He's in here Saturdays.
Oh, yeah? Is he?
Yeah. And you mentioned about the, because your family had originally settled at the Captain David Noyes farm.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about. And what was it you said that's right on the stagecoach line?
Well, it's somewhere in the history of Norway, David Noyes had a tavern or a stop for the stagecoach line, but that map of Norway shows the stagecoach route would have been north Norway level rather than closer to the lake.